French President Macron calls a national security meeting to discuss the Israeli-made Pegasus spyware after reports about its use in France. Iran's President Rouhani announces the opening of the country's first oil export terminal outside the strategic Strait of Hormuz in the Gulf of Oman. And in China, tens of thousands of people are evacuated from a flood-stricken city as torrential rains continue to lash the central province of Henan. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Bashar Zanjafeh. Good to have you with us. French President Emmanuel Macron is calling for an unscheduled national security meeting to discuss the use of Israeli-made Pegasus spyware in his country. A French government spokesman says that Macron has taken the issue very seriously and is dedicating the meeting to the question of cybersecurity. Now, this amid recent reports showing the usage of Pegasus software for spying on international figures, including activists, journalists, and politicians. Macron himself has been listed as a potential target of the spyware created by an Israeli firm, NSO. It's been strongly criticized for the software's misuse for espionage activities in many countries, including in the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Bahrain. Iran has announced the opening of its first oil export terminal outside the strategic Strait of Hormuz in the Gulf of Oman.
We start the operation of the 1,000-kilometer-long pipeline transferring crude oil from Ghura in the southwest to Jusk, and the operation of the Mekran region export terminal. This opening is a very strong response to Plutters and the United States and to all those who think of the Islamic Republic as enjoying no sustainable future.
In a cabinet meeting, Hassan Rouhani said the pipeline was completed in a matter of 2 years and marks the Islamic Republic's most strategic project. The president noted that Iran's oil will be exported through the Gulf of Oman, and that's what makes this project significant. Oil Minister Bijan Zangin also said that the terminal is the depiction of reliance on the country's domestic capabilities. The United Kingdom has decided to send two aircraft carriers to the South China Sea, and this on the heels of the U.S. deployment of 25 F-22 Raptor fighter jets to that region. The U.S. and its allies are accelerating tensions with China. They say that this sends a message to Beijing. Is this a message that war is around the corner? Now, China, meantime, is not standing idle by. Its military capabilities may prove insurmountable.
Britain has announced the permanent deployment of two warships in the South China Sea amid growing tensions between the U.S. and China. Britain's Defense Secretary Ben Wallace said the U.K. will permanently assign two ships in the region by the end of this year. He made the announcement in a joint press conference with his Japanese counterpart in Tokyo on Tuesday.
Following on from the strike group's inaugural deployment, the United Kingdom will permanently assign two ships in the region from later this year, as well as contributing a littoral response group in the coming years to come.
Japan is a close ally of the U.S., and it hosts the biggest concentration of U.S. military forces outside of the U.S., including ships, aircraft, and troops. The deployment would be after a strike group consisting of U.K.'s Queen Elizabeth aircraft carrier and escort ships sailed through the waters in the South China Sea in September. The Queen Elizabeth is being escorted by two destroyers, two frigates, two support vessels, and ships from the U.S. and the Netherlands. It will come to Japan through the South China Sea, parts of which are claimed by China and Southeast Asian countries, with stops in India, Singapore, and South Korea. In a statement on the deployment, Pentagon spokesperson congratulated Britain for its, quote, commitment to an interconnected network of allies and partners who mutually cooperate and support freedom of navigation and a rules-based order in the Indo-Pacific region.
These are actually illusionary entities. Yes, they have sets of laws and they are separate countries, but the globalists who run the United States and the United Kingdom work together as one entity. So what we have is two countries in which the citizens are taught from young age that they live in a sovereign state. But in fact, the two countries of the UK and the US are both under the basic control of a globalist elite.
The South China Sea is a gateway to major sea routes through which about $3.4 trillion worth of trade passes each year. China claims sovereignty over much of the strategic waterway and has, since 2014, built artificial islands on reefs and installed military bases on them.
Now, what we know about the UK's move is that the country has permanently deployed two warships in the Asia-Pacific region, and that's why London is deepening its security ties with Japan. The UK says it is worried about China's territorial ambitions in the region, including Taiwan. But what does this have to do with the UK? I mean, is it blindly following Washington's lead?
UK's Defense Secretary has said that London would also eventually deploy a littoral response group to the Pacific. That's a unit of Marines trained to undertake missions including evacuations and anti-terrorism operations.
The UK and the United States function as one entity, especially when they have a common target, which in this time is China and in a secondary level, Iran.
UK's latest policy announcements are in line with US's anti-China drive. The Biden administration's approach toward China is taking shape. Many believe Biden will continue the policies of his predecessor to contain China. While the U.S. has seemingly reduced its involvement in West Asia, the American military has sought to refocus its attention on preparing for a conflict with its major rivals, China and Russia, which it considers to be major competition in the insatiable U.S. quest for power and influence. However, Washington's economy and military power is on the wane, and whether Washington likes it or not, it has to change its warmongering policies and adopt a rather more cooperative one, something that is not likely to happen anytime soon.
The United States runs what is typically called a protection racket. You must pay to buy United States weapons and defense systems in order not to be threatened by the boogeymen that they create out of other independent countries. So the United States is always leaning on its so-called allies because in effect, with the exception of England, with the exception of the UK, all of the other countries are military protectorates or socio-economic and military colonies of the United States.
How the Biden administration actually deals with thorny issues between the two countries is yet to be seen. It will depend on how China responds to U.S. actions. Given the strong negative public sentiments towards each other and their increasingly divergent domestic political practices, the truly benign strategic competition still remains difficult, if not impossible, to achieve.
In China, more than 73,000 people have been evacuated from a flood-hit city as torrential rains continue to lash the central province of Henan. Footage released by state media show residents of Anyang City being evacuated by an excavator. At least 33 people have been killed in the province over the past couple of days. The victims include 12 passengers trapped in a submerged subway in the provincial capital, Changzhou. Several people remain missing, authorities saying the rainfall was the heaviest on record, with the rainstorm bringing almost a year's worth of precipitation in just 3 days. The deluge has sparked the evacuation of 200,000 people and disrupted transportation systems. The government has ordered an immediate review of subway flood controls and disaster relief measures. Australian officials have warned that COVID cases could rise further. The country is struggling to contain a rapidly spreading Delta variant of the disease. The most populous state, New South Wales, reported 124 new infections, the highest in 16 months. Victoria State also logged 26 cases, a higher figure than the day before. Now, this is despite a weeks-long lockdown on over 13 million Australians that has angered citizens. From the start of the pandemic, 915 Australians have succumbed to COVID-19. The overall caseload there now hovering around 32,000. Authorities have been criticized for the slow vaccination process, with just 11% of the population being fully vaccinated. British supermarkets and suppliers have warned of a possible food shortage despite by self-isolating his staff amid rising COVID cases. British news outlets have released photographs of empty supermarket shelves as retailers' operations are affected by missing staff at the stores and in supply chains. An official application is warning contacts of COVID patients to self-isolate for 10 days. The alerts have also forced thousands of workers in other industries and school kids to stay at home. Dubbed as the pandemic, the app has forced an additional 600,000 people to self-isolate in recent days, raising the total figure to 1 million. On Monday, the UK eased all virus curbs in England, while new cases are surging toward levels not seen since January. Speaking of the UK, the country has asked the European Union to look at its proposal on Northern Ireland seriously amid disagreements over post-Brexit trading arrangements for that region. Prime Minister Boris Johnson made a call during a phone conversation with the President of the European Commission. He told Ursula von der Leyen that the current operation of the so-called Northern Ireland Protocol is unsustainable and requires the proposed changes. This after the European Commission ruled out renegotiating post-Brexit trading arrangements for Northern Ireland. It has stressed the bloc's readiness to seek creative solutions within the framework of the agreed protocol, but will not agree to renegotiation. Now, the EU Environment Minister said that recent floods in Western Europe and extreme weather events around the globe must act as a wake-up call. Activists say that the 27 state bloc's climate change goals are not ambitious enough. Jerome Hughes reports.
The cleanup operation continues in Belgium and Germany, the countries worst affected by last week's devastating floods following torrential rainfall. Senior figures from the European Commission have just attended a meeting of EU environment ministers.
50 degrees northwest Canada, 40 degrees in Siberia, 40 degrees in Central Europe, the floods you've mentioned, droughts agriculture is dealing with, wildfires.
Last week, the European Commission unveiled plans to cut greenhouse gas emissions in the 27-nation bloc by 55% over the next 9 years. The Commission claims it's a matter of life and death.
The infernos and hurricanes we have seen over the last few weeks are only a very small window into what our future could look like.
Environmentalists point to what's happening right now. Raging wildfires in parts of the United States and Canada, severe flooding in regions of China, crippling droughts in areas of Iran, recent tornadoes in the Czech Republic. In order to save the planet, campaigners insist the EU must cooperate with big powers like Russia, China and Iran instead of pushing them away.
Official data shows transport accounts for 29% of pollution in the EU, but one large ship generates as much carbon dioxide per day as 80,000 cars. Of course, the aviation industry is another major player, and so too is agriculture. Experts say the key is to cut our energy consumption and be more efficient.
Therefore, what energy a country uses, what sources, what does it burn? Does it burn coal? Does it burn gas, which has half the emissions of coal? Or does it do renewables, carbon-free sources? This is tremendously important for climate change.
Environmental groups say the EU needs to move faster and claims the bloc's goals are simply not ambitious enough. They are demanding that leaders agree on decisive action when they meet at a major UN climate change conference scheduled for October in Glasgow, Scotland. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Staying with Europe, the German Chancellor is saying that sanctions are on the table in case Moscow uses a pipeline bringing Russian gas to Germany for political gains. Angela Merkel, however, expressed hope that Germany won't need to impose sanctions on Russia, noting Moscow's assurances not to use energy as a weapon. Merkel hailed an agreement with the U.S. over the Nord Stream 2 pipeline announced Wednesday as a positive move, although some differences remain. Pipeline that's nearing completion has long been a sore point between Berlin and Washington. Germany argues that it needs additional gas deliveries to phase out coal and nuclear energy But a U.S. and several European states say it will increase energy dependence on Russia and its geopolitical influence. At least 20 civilians are killed in clashes between rebels and pro-government forces in Ethiopia's Afar region. Local officials saying that heavy fighting is underway in Afar, where nearly 70,000 people have been displaced following its spillover clashes from the neighboring Tigray region. Fighters crossed into Afar over the weekend in pursuit of government forces who fled to Tigray last month. The region has been the scene of fighting between army forces and rebels who accuse the government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed of marginalizing the people in Tigray. Hundreds of people have been killed and tens of thousands more displaced since the conflict began last November. Turning to the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker has kicked two Republicans out of a select committee that she created to investigate a deadly January 6th protest on the Capitol Hill. Nancy Pelosi said that she rejects the appointment of Representatives Jim Jordan and Jim Banks, who are both staunch supporters of former President Donald Trump. Pelosi created a 13-member committee after Republican senators voted down a proposal to establish a 9/11-style commission to probe the unrest. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy responded to Pelosi's move by pulling all Republicans from the panel. He said that the GOP would not be part of what he called a sham process. Four people and one police officer were killed when pro-Trump protesters assaulted the Congress on the 6th of January. Washington correspondent Colin Campbell says Republicans are walking back on rhetoric against Trump because they know he's the lifeblood of the party right now.
Where we saw a lot of Republicans speaking vehemently against what happened, many of them speaking against the president's rhetoric, saying that the president was responsible. Well, we've seen them walk that back quite a bit since then, and because they know that the former president is still the lifeblood of the party right now. He's still wildly popular, even though we know that Joe Biden won the popular vote and the electoral vote. We still have to remember tens of millions of people still voted for the former president. So He still has his followers out there. He still wants to lead the Republican Party. He's still holding rallies. So he's still very much a relevant part of the Republican Party. A lot of Republicans know this. So they are, again, sticking their weight with the president, with the former president, because they know that he has a lot of influence. And that's why you're seeing a lot of Republicans who are a lot more timiditous about offering their perspectives with authenticity like they were doing just after the insurrection early January.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The EU continues to look the other way, and those who look the other way are as responsible for the egregious crimes of occupation against Palestinians as those who carry them out, says David Hurstrider in an article titled EU's Shameless Complicity in Israeli Regime's Crimes. Stay tuned, please, for the second part of this article. On July 8, Ghazanfar Abu Atwan, aged 28, was released from 10 months of administrative detention after 65 days on hunger strike. He was transferred to a hospital in the occupied West Bank, where doctors described him as clinging to life. Abu Atwan was arrested 10 months ago and has been held without charge. The Israeli regime has no obligation to present any evidence to justify an arrest or detention. He is one of the 520 Palestinians held in military jails without charge or trial. On the same day, the Zionist regime forces demolished the family home of Montasser Shalabi, a Palestinian-American accused of involvement in a shooting that killed an Israeli student and wounded two others last May. The two-story villa in Termes Ayah was leveled in a controlled explosion. Meanwhile, in the city of Aqqa, in the occupied territories, more than 200 Palestinians were arrested or detained in the wake of the demonstrations in May. The mother of one of the detainees told Middle East Eye, "More than 30 militarized police forces raided our house at a break of dawn. They arrested my 16-year-old son, cuffed him and covered his eyes with black tape and dragged him to a police car. They did the same to more than 20 youngsters." All of the above only elicited one statement of condemnation. It came from the U.S. Embassy in Al-Quds over the punitive demolition of a Palestinian-American home. It called on all parties to refrain from unilateral steps that exacerbate tensions, which includes the punitive demolition of Palestinian homes. Now please tell how Lapid was allowed to tell the EU recently that the Israeli regime and the EU share common values. Lapid listed those common values as human rights, a commitment to basic components of democracy, a free press, independent judiciary, strong civil society, and freedom of religion, along with fighting together against climate change, international terrorism, racism, and extremism. But what Lapid omitted to mention and what his host did not remind him of was the Israeli regime other values: lynch mob justice, forcible transfer, collective punishment, illegal demolitions of houses and villages, shooting to kill, maiming children in detention without trial. Nor did Lapid mention that in July, the Supreme Court ruled that the Israeli regime's nation-state law was constitutional and did not negate the state's democratic character. This basic law states that the right to exercise self-determination in the regime of Israel is unique to the Jewish people. It openly discriminates against Israeli regime's Christian and Muslim citizens. It was not a low-level visit. Lapid met with Joseph Borrell, the High Commissioner for Foreign Affairs, followed by the foreign ministers of Germany, France, Holland, and the Czech Republic, and the NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. What common values does the Israeli regime share with the EU? Settler lynch mobs protected by armed troops? Illegal demolitions of houses and villages? Shoot-to-kill policies targeting children? The use of bullets that fragment inside a body? The prevention of medics attending the wounded? The passing of racist laws? Israeli citizens are not prevented from uniting with their English, French, or German spouses, but they are, if they happen to be Palestinian. Is this what the EU or NATO call common values? None of what the various arms of the Israeli regime, their settlers, their troops, their police, their administrators, or their courts have done to Palestinians in the last weeks is new. However, it's not business as usual. The EU continues to look the other way. Those who look the other way are as responsible for these egregious crimes of occupation as those who carry them out. It would really like to know how Heiko Maas, the German foreign minister, Jean-Yves Le Drian, the French foreign minister, Sigrid Gass, the Dutch foreign minister, or Jakub Kolhanek, the Czech foreign minister, justify shaking hands with Lapid. An EU statement said they discussed the importance of enhancing EU-Israel relations and considered how to address existing challenges in order to achieve this common goal. They also spoke about how the dialogue with Palestinians can be moved forward. With eviction orders, bulldozers, and rubber tip bullets?
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Muhammad Mahmoud Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين سلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, welcome once again to yet another episode of The Bridge, a program in which we try to discuss the different supplications of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, supplications that have come in the form of a prayer manual known as As-Sahifatu As-Sajjadiyya. We have been discussing the eighth supplication of this prayer manual, and it is on seeking refuge from evil traits and blameworthy actions. When Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam would recite the dua of seeking refuge from evil traits and blameworthy actions, we are still discussing the first verse and the first phrase where Imam expresses and says, Allahumma inni a'udhu bika min hayajanil hirs. O God, I seek refuge in you from the arousal of greed. Now, one of the questions that we would like to discuss, and that is very important, is we have to understand that what is the origin of this greed that comes about in the human being. If we understand the origin, then we will be able to know how to go about rectifying the situation that has come about in ourselves. Now, when it comes to origin, there is a principle that the ethicians mention, which is very important, and that is how the soul is in the state of equilibrium or imbalance. Sometimes it is in the state of balance, and sometimes it is in the state of imbalance.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
A bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifatu As-Sajjadiyyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
basically, the human being has three important faculties in him. One is the faculty of intellect, one is the faculty of anger, and one is the faculty of appetite. If these three faculties are in their states of equilibrium and balance, you find that beautiful things come about and good traits settle in the person's mind and heart. He becomes a good person. He has very beautiful characteristics that he develops because the state of these three faculties are in their balance and in their state of equilibrium. But if they are not in the state of equilibrium and they go to the two excesses of exaggeration and negligence, which in Arabic we call ifrat and tafrit, then you find that blameworthy characteristics ensue and issue from that state that they have. So it is because of this imbalance that we find greed comes about. But we have to know and detect which is that faculty that actually enables greed to come about. Now, before looking at that, this statement that we just mentioned, that, you know, we have three faculties and, you know, they are sometimes in the state of their disequilibrium and sometimes they are in the state of their equilibrium. If they are in the state of their equilibrium, you find good characteristics issue from the person. But if you find that they are not in the state of equilibrium, then blameworthy characteristics slowly and gradually develop in that person. In order to understand this, I would like to quote a very beautiful passage from the commentary of Dua al-Jawshan al-Kabir, written by the great philosopher Mulla Hadi Sabzawari. I just would like to translate what he has already mentioned. I could also mention the Arabic portion, but then because of the limitation of time, we will just look at the translation so that we know that what kind of faculties do we have and how are they when they are in their states of excess and negligence that we mentioned.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
The great philosopher Mullah Hadi Sabzawari, he says that surely the human being has three faculties of the soul. A, the faculty of comprehension, sometimes known as faculty of intellection. B, the faculty of appetite, which is also known as al-quwwa al-shahawiyya. The first is al-quwwa al-aqliyya, this is al-quwwa al-shahawiyya. And C, the faculty of anger, al-quwwa al-ghadabiyya, also translated as the irascible faculty. The deviation of the faculty of comprehension towards the two directions of excess and negligence are known as jurbuza, when a person, you know, goes to the extreme excess of the faculty of intellect, whereby he makes conclusions without having properly understood the premises. He just goes towards conclusions and makes conclusions and doesn't arrive to the correct conclusions. You'll find this state is known as jurbuza. And then he continues and says, and the state of negligence is known as balaha, silliness. That means he has intellect, but he is very slow in using his intellect, respectively. And then he says, and its state of equilibrium is known as al-hikmah, this faculty of intellect. When it is in the state of its equilibrium, it is known as wisdom, hikmah. Then he continues and says, the deviation of the faculty of appetite towards the two directions of excess and negligence is called sharah. Sharah means gluttony. That is when it is in the state of excess, when your shahwa, al-quwwa al-shahawiyya, your faculty of desire and appetite goes to the extreme. This is known as cupidity or gluttony, which is in Arabic, we call it sharah. And if it is in the state of negligence, it is known as khumud. Khumud is stillness. That means, you know, a person doesn't go to what is necessary for him in life. For example, he doesn't get married. He doesn't go towards food to eat so that he gets strength and does ibadah of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He abstains from food just so that, because he says that I don't want to have food, without any proper reason. This is known as khumud. Both of these are reprimanded and blameworthy. And then he says, while its state of equilibrium is known as al-iffah, that is chastity and temperance. When a person has al-quwwa al-shahawiyya and it is not in the two extremes, he uses it according to what Islam has prescribed in a balanced way, that is known as iffah, that means chastity. And then he goes to the third faculty and says, the deviation of the faculty of anger towards the direction of excess and negligence is known as tahawwur, recklessness in the extreme excess, and jubna, cowardice in the negligent part of it. You know, when your right is taken, but you keep quiet, you don't fight for it, for example, this is also blameworthy. And then he says, whereas its state of equilibrium is known as ash-shuja'a, when a person is brave and intrepid, that is when he is in the state of the equilibrium of the faculty of anger. Inshallah, we'll continue with our discussion in our next session. We come to the end of the program. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin.
That was the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Khalfan, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواه از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Germany is asking itself how one of the world's richest countries managed to be taken by surprise by last week's extreme weather events, as more details emerge of how early warnings about record rainfall and expected floods did not make their way to the communities most at risk. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Philip Altman. The piece is titled German Flood Alert System Criticized for Monumental Failure. Germany is asking itself how one of the world's richest countries managed to be taken by surprise by last week's extreme weather events, as more details emerge of how early warnings about record rainfall and expected floods did not make their way to the communities most at risk. In Erfstadt, south of Cologne, where a flooded gravel quarry swallowed up cars, houses and parts of a historic castle, residents who had installed the federal government's weather warning app were advised on Wednesday, 14th of July, to stay inside their houses. By Thursday, 15th of July, they were informed that a nearby dam was at risk of breaking, putting them in extreme danger. Yet, in the Ahrweiler district in the state of Rhineland-Palatinate, where at least 117 people died after torrents of rainwater collected in the surrounding Eifel Mountains and then tore through several villages last Wednesday, the NINA warning app had not sent out a comparable warning, the German news agency Deutsche Presseagentur reported on Monday, 19th of July. Even though the European Flood Awareness System, EFAS, sent out specific warnings for the worst-hit German regions 4 days before the start of the downpour, the ensuing flash floods still appeared to have taken the majority of residents by surprise. Professor Hannah Cloak, a hydrologist at University of Reading in England, who set up and advises EFAS, told the Politico website the death toll was a monumental failure of the system. The German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer dismissed suggestions that federal officials had made mistakes and said warnings were passed on to local authorities who make decisions on disaster protection. The German Interior Minister in the western state of North Rhine-Westphalia, Herbert Ruhl, where 47 people died, conceded that the early warning system had not worked as efficiently as it could have, but said he did not see any fundamental problems with the system. A spokesperson for Herbert Ruhl's ministry on Monday, 19th of July, said it had passed on warnings to the local municipalities concerned. Head of Germany's Federal Office of Civic Protection and Disaster Assistance appeared to shift the blame to local authorities. The warning infrastructure as such wasn't our problem, but the question of how sensitive the public authorities and the population are in their response, said the agency's president, Armin Schuster. Armin Schuster told broadcaster Deutschlandfunk that digital warnings such as low warning apps, text messages or emails did not always reach all those at risk. Instead, he called for an investment program to increase the number of flood warning sirens in areas that could see more floods in the coming years. The Disaster Assistance Agency has been facing scrutiny since last year's Nationwide Emergency Warning Day, the first test run of the country's warning infrastructure since reunification in 1991. Slated to run for 20 minutes, the event on 10th of September 2020 was meant to demonstrate the functionality of everything from sirens to push notifications on smartphones. Instead, the warning day demonstrated the current system's gaps, with many receiving push alerts with a delay or not at all after the nationwide push overloaded the system. Annalena Baerbock, the Green Party's candidate for chancellor at elections this September, told Der Spiegel magazine that the appropriate response to the catastrophic floods was a tripartite national effort of strength involving a more centralized disaster management system, readjusting the design of cities and rivers for the event of more extreme weather events, and increased efforts on climate protection. We need to reshape disaster management, Annalena Baerbock said, and the federal government needs to take more responsibility for it. As receding water levels laid bare the full extent of the damage in towns and villages in western Germany, residents feared they could be left without access to electricity and drinking water for months. In Ahrweiler district, about 30,000 are currently without electricity, drinking water and gas, after Wednesday's flash floods broke up sewage systems, tore through a major gas pipeline and brought a purification plant to a standstill. It looks like the infrastructure is destroyed so badly that some places won't have drinking water for weeks or even months, the mayor of the town of Altena, in Cornelia Weingand, told the newspaper Bild. It is clear that our community will end up looking very different because those buildings that defined the area for more than 50 or 100 or 150 years will have to be torn down. Even water towers in parts of the area that were spared the worst of the floods had run dry and had to be refilled either through tank lorries or by reviving disused wells and setting up mobile water treatment units, local media reported on Monday. Germany's Red Cross has transported 2 7,000-litre and 4 3,800-litre tanks of drinking water into the region. The Koblenz-based energy provider EVM said it was still in the process of establishing exactly how many households in Ahrweiler district were without gas, which is used to heat water and homes in the region, but that the damage to its supply system was dramatic.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillahir-rahmanir-rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. One of the things that we as human beings in this world really try to achieve is that we try to create relationships, and those relationships, in order for them to last, you know, with effort in it. But certain relationships can also have depth. That is, you can have a varied gradation in the type of relationship that you have with a particular person. And not always is it a person. For example, the concept of uns. Now, uns is an extreme closeness, an extreme proximity, or as some have translated it, as a intimacy with something. That, you know, you are extremely attached to this particular thing, and this particular thing gives you tranquility. So some of the most important things, obviously, where intimacy in its real sense should be found is with, for example, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, the Holy Qur'an or the Glorious Qur'an. These type of, or these things are where true intimacy, you know, should try, and we should try and attain. But in this tradition from Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi as-salam, he speaks about intimacy in terms of this material world. And for a person in this material world, how can he, you know, where can he find this closeness, this intimacy, and obviously then this tranquility and this peace of mind that a person can get. So in this tradition, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam says that al-uns, that is this closeness, this intimacy that one may have with something or someone, is in three people. Now obviously the Imam is speaking about a, you know, in this material world, and the things that people, you know, see on a daily basis. The first one that the Imam says is a compatible wife, a wife that a person is, you know, in sync with. Obviously, it is not 100%, it's impossible for that to be 100% between us. But a compatible wife obviously gives a person peace of mind and that tranquility that a person may need. The second person in which intimacy can be found is in a righteous child. Obviously, you know, this peace of mind, knowing that, you know, this child will continue one's legacy. When one passes away, the duties that the child needs to perform will be performed, and so on and so forth. And the last one that the Imam says is an agreeable brother. There is a brother who has the same type of worldview than you, a brother who has the same goal, especially when it comes to goals in terms of religion, goals in terms of, you know, serving Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, serving the Imam of the time, and so on and so forth. So these are the three individuals that Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions, that intimacy or an extreme closeness, and as a result, tranquility can be found. Inshallah, until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
The Spotlight.
An Israeli spyware has been used to spy on human rights activists and journalists worldwide. It has also targeted the phones of French, Iraqi, and Moroccan leaders, among others. The obvious question is whether this was done with the knowledge of Israeli authorities or not. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how this spying software was used by dictatorial regimes like the UAE and Saudi Arabia, in which, in the case of Saudi Arabia, the Crown Prince used it to spy on slain dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
How safe are our mobile phones? This is a question many activists and journalists have been pondering